This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and a good Wednesday afternoon to you all. Let's start the show today with exactly where American courts have drawn the line between lawful labor union activity and illegal action such as racketeering. It's a fascinating history that matters now, as a federal probe of local unions has put Boston Mayor Marty Walsh in the spotlight, and the city's tourism director, Kenneth Brissett, has been indicted on charges of, quote, union-related extortion. Milton Valencia is Metro reporter for the Boston Globe, and he looked into past high-profile union cases around the country, and he joins us now. Welcome back to the show, Milton.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, you started by looking at a Supreme Court case from 1973, the U.S. v. Edmonds. Why that case?
Well, union activity in the courts has shifted ever since the 30s. New York City Truck Drivers Union, there have been a number of cases. But this one has been kind of the holding case, meaning it's the one that has set the parameters for what unions believe they can and can't do. And it's been kind of like the guiding case ever since it was heard and decided in the early 70s.
So what happened in Edmonds? What was the situation that was the justices were asked to look at?
Yes, in that case you had Electrical Workers Union who were bargaining a new contract with a utility company in Louisiana in the early 70s. So this is a union that had a contract in place with a utility company, was bargaining for a new agreement. The negotiations were a little tumultuous at one point, and there was some actual violence that was committed by the union members, firing high-powered rifles at transformers, blowing up one transformer, draining oil from another, all acts of violence. In this case, the Supreme Court decided that those acts of violence, as horrendous as they were, could not constitute federal Hobbs Act extortion because they were carried out with a legitimate legal end, a legitimate union end, and that was their constitutionally right, constitutionally protected right to negotiate as a union.
Right.
So those acts were protected.
So a couple things there. So the Hobbs Act that you mentioned, that's the 1934 Anti-Racketeering Act. And the other thing that you pointed out in your Globe piece today, sort of to dovetail what you just said, is that it seemed as if the justices were, in 1973, were reluctant to basically say that certain things were outside the bounds of not just legitimate union activity, but the things that unions could do legitimately as forms of protest during a labor impasse. Is that right?
That's right. That's exactly key. While the decision was huge for unions, it was somewhat limited, and especially in prosecutors' views. Yes, the justices decided that you could carry these out. A threat could not constitute extortion as long as it was a legitimate means. It doesn't mean that whatever that underlying act was, say it was chest bumping, say it was a punch in the face. We know protests were violent in the past. Those particular acts, while horrible and possible state crimes, could not constitute the federal act of extortion because they were carried out as a legitimate union end. What is the interesting question is, what is that definition of a legitimate union end?
Right, and especially in, you know, if we're trying to take lessons from the 73 case and apply them to what's going on in Boston now. I mean, you spoke with legal experts about this. I think a key difference that you point out in your piece is that there, in the Edmonds case, there was a contract dispute. There was a labor dispute between employee and employer, but that may not necessarily be the case in given the charges that Kenneth Brissett has been, or the indictment that Kenneth Brissett faces.
Exactly. I mean, the Edmonds decision, as important as it was, it really seemed to, according to the lawyers I've talked to, really pertain to your typical bargaining agreement type of picketing. The same thing that we've seen with these Verizon workers out in the streets lately. They have a contract in place. They have a bona fide employee against a bona fide employer, and that's how the high court decided it. What we're seeing in recent years, and this has a lot to do with union history, where the unions aren't getting the contracts that they once got, and they're seeking these contracts. And in some cases, they've turned to some of these tough negotiation tactics. The question is whether a union member can do this if you don't have that contract in place. And I think that's what we're seeing. That's what these prosecutions, especially in Boston, are happening right now. The question is, does that old Edmonds decision that says, you know, legitimate union activity pertain to people who don't have a union contract with their employer?
And of course, also in the case of Kenneth Brissett, there's also the fundamental question of whether he was acting on behalf of the union or on behalf of the city of Boston as a public employee.
And that's what's key here. You have to have a union negotiating with an employer. That's what the Edmonds decision said. And that has been the holding a defense, successful defense in many cases, for unions throughout the years. That's what unions have used as their go-to defense, and the courts have found it's a legitimate defense. The question is, can you do it without a contract, and can a city employee who's not a member of that union, can he do that? We know that Ken Brissett has been charged with Hobbs Act extortion for union-related extortion, and the question is, while union members have raised their Edmonds decision as a defense, can he, and the legal analysts I've talked to don't believe he can.
Well, finally, Milton, let me ask you, I'm curious what legal experts you talked to said about the fact that the Edmonds case is 1973, here we are in 2016, things are really very different in terms of the overall influence of unions or the labor movement as a whole in the United States. And we have had cases in between 73 and now where members of labor unions were successfully prosecuted for certain actions that they took. I mean, what does sort of the shift in that ground tell us about, you know, or what impact does that have here in Boston?
Well, what I found in my reporting, what was interesting is a lot of these cases have happened in these old East Coast cities, you know, Philadelphia, New York, cities in New York, Buffalo, for instance, where the old union labor was strong back in the day. These cities were built and these communities were built on strong labor work. Historically, those labor works had contracts. I think through the years, as union power has somewhat diminished and the number of their contracts has diminished, their, as one lawyer put it, their relevance has diminished, and they don't have that holding power. So when back in the day, when the Edmonds decision was pertaining to a legitimate contract that was in place, I think what you have now is you have a few union members who are trying to get a contract in place, and they've resorted to this practice believing that the Edmonds decision protects them, but we don't know if that's the case. And this is, you know, every lawyer agrees that the Supreme Court is going to have to decide whether that Edmonds decision is going to be is also going to protect these workers who don't have a contract in place, don't have the contracts that they once did before.
Well, Milton Valencia is the Metro reporter for the Boston Globe, bringing us up to speed on the legal history behind union-related activities that have come under legal scrutiny in the past many decades. We've got a link to his article that appeared in the Globe today. It's at our website, radioboston.org. Milt, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.